Hello, operatives. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of Once Upon a Kill Team, the podcast about narrative play in Warhammer 40k Kill Team. I'm Jason.
And I'm Sean, and we want to talk to you about building stories around the gameplay in this grimdark, terrible universe.
In this episode, we have fabulous special guests, Gregor and Jester from Grimdark Gamers. They have their fantastic YouTube channel where you can see the progress of their narrative campaign and so much more. So welcome to the show, guys. We're so happy to have you on.
Yeah, thank you for having us. We're glad to be on your very, very famous podcast because we love the whole narrative stuff of Kill Team.
Absolutely.
And you guys were the main podcast we were listening to alongside Kill Team Casuals, so it's lovely to finally be here.
Well, flattery will get you everywhere, so you can definitely come back on.
We don't talk about the casuals here. Do they even talk about Kill Team? We're not sure.
Well, in fact, I think they've been coming distinctly less casual. Russ is becoming quite the professional. I'm very impressed at what he's doing with his legionaries in the tournament scene. The
podium's a podium.
He's going to get the sack, I'm pretty sure. quite rightly, too. So what we normally kick off the show with is hobbying. We're big fans here. I've seen quite a few of your hobby videos, so I know you guys are keen too. So have you got any painting, building, kit bashing you've done lately?
Well, actually, Jester, you've done a lot more to me. Why don't we start off with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So the main thing that I've been working on is trying to finish off the last of my Blood Angels before 10th edition comes out. So I've been working on some Eradicators and my Blade Guard. So that's been fun. And that combined with desperately wanting to get some more World Eaters and more demons. But I haven't quite got to that point yet. But that's coming up.
I feel
yeah,
you.
We're going to be putting some...
Oh, go on.
Sorry, I jumped in there.
I absolutely love the Blade Guard models. I think they're such a good kit.
They are pretty awesome. Yeah, I love how knightly they are. I'm a sucker for anything knight-based. So, fantastic.
I was going to say, I've been very, very impressed with your World Eaters that you just finished the Kill Team. And we're going to have some... They're going to appear in a video soon, mm-hmm. At least like in the upcoming podcast video we've got, we're going to show them off.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to absolutely feature in a battle report at some point.
They certainly will. I'm quite excited to use them.
Yeah, too right. Nice. What scheme did you go for, Jester?
I just went for the traditional red and brass. And because I was trying to put them together for the Kill Team, then obviously I was trying to build them so I could use them as a legionary kill team, yep. Or potentially use the intercessor rules, depending on what kind of works better. But for that, because you've got the anointed, I had to do a little bit of a conversion to make him look a bit more different. So all I ended up doing was sticking a bloodletter arm onto him, but it came out really well, and now he's like my favorite model of the whole thing.
Oh, I can't wait to see them.
If you're a big fan of the kit bash, not with me, obviously, I don't do any kit bashing.
Well, I was going to say, Sean, your Orc Stodies are some of the most famous teams on the gram out there. I'm very impressed with whenever I see those come up.
Yeah, I'm really proud of them. You know, I still haven't finished painting them. I'm looking at one of the guys. It's because I hate painting, like, human skin. And they've got one of these like heads attached to their waist, and that's just still primer white, and it's looking at me. I'll do it someday.
I've definitely experienced that when I've been painting like Death Guard up, and then it's another shrunken head that I have to somehow make look decent.
Yeah, exactly. I was happy with the green and gold, and I always said I'll come back to it. Eventually, at some point, I will. But no, I'll take Jason. Yeah, nice. If he wants to do it, do it.
So I pretty much talked about mine, so it's up to you now.
All right, yes. Yeah, so my hobby. Well, when we were getting ready for the narrative campaign, we painted up quite a lot of different kill teams. Mm-hmm. And not all of them have actually appeared in our narrative campaign yet. And it was to the point, it's like, I need a small break from that. So right now I've been focusing on getting our 40k stuff ready. Mm-hmm. So we stopped playing 40k for a bit during 9th edition because Kill Team is the superior game, of course. But 10th edition has got us tempted. So I've been painting some Tyranids, which have been in our pile of shame for far too long.
Oh, so many, yes.
Yeah, so I'll happily admit this here. I'm currently painting up a Manonthrope, which we bought back in 2007. So that's... No, it was earlier than 2006. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be swiftly followed by a Forge World Trigon. And then it's going to be back to the Kill Teams. The Adeptus Arbetes have been calling my name for long enough. So yeah, I'm going to finish up that stuff for the Tyranids. And then back to Kill Team with the Arbetes.
Well, the models that have been on your shelf since 2006-7, that's pretty impressive. But you're getting them done. You're getting them done.
Getting through that. Yeah, they've been with us for a long time. They've come to us with, well, we bought them when we were still living in Lincoln in the United Kingdom. And now they've made it over across the Atlantic to us in the United States. And it's about time we finally put some paint on them. So that's what I've been doing.
I think they've earned it traveling all that way.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah, the resin was starting to get a bit brittle and showing its age. I was like, you have your time to paint, yeah.
Yeah, it was starting to go a weird, like, yellowy colour.
But yeah, that's pretty much been it for hobbying at the moment. I'm looking forward to getting involved a bit more with all the Kill Teams that are waiting. But no, that's it for recent weeks.
That's wonderful. Pretty good. What about you, Sean?
That sounds absolutely wonderful. Jason, have you been up to anything? Have you been continuing with your diversifying of games?
Yeah, I mean, these guys didn't get the message that you don't talk non-Kill Team on this podcast, but I'm just fancy the same. So I'm trying to get back into Blitz Bowl, which is the sort of smaller, friendlier, I would claim better version of Blood Bowl. And I finished painting up my dwarf team, which we can call the Leagues of Votan, if you like. I've been quite pleased with those. And next up, again with a sort of Kill Team theme, I've got my Chaos team, which includes Beastmen. So, you know, you like goat heads. I've got to do some of those. I did flirt with the idea of kind of bearing in mind no one can get hold of Feldal Ravagers. Could I convert a Blood Bowl team?
Blood Bowl models would be a pretty good stand-in, you know.
Yeah, because the shoulder pads... In fact, I would actually say that the Blood Bowl models with shoulder pads look more sci-fi than the actual official team, which looks like they're from a fantasy, you know, book. The other thing that kind of has plagued my mind a bit and... You know, been in my dreams is a few podcasts ago. Someone asked, "Would Orc Storm Boys make for a good proxy for Void Dancer Troop?" And I keep thinking about it. I'd love to have another Orc team, and the idea of some jet-packed Orcs stomping around. You can have a weird boy for the Shadow Seer, and then some character with a massive gun.
But you were losing sleep over this, trying to work out how you'd do all the models, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, anyway, it's pretty bad when you're dreaming about these things.
I think that's a fantastic idea. I've always loved the Storm Boys models, and I'm ashamed I didn't think of that myself.
We could have a Storm Boy off. what would be more orky than that? Anyway, that's me. Partly finishing some actual models and partly dreaming about some others to do. And I guess the other thing on my mind is, as we mentioned on the last podcast, there is the Ashes of Faith coming out. And if I can get a copy of that, then that's going to fill up my painting schedule for a while.
I mean, there's enough models in the box, aren't there?
There's plenty. So yeah. But I think you've got your own answer to what do you do if you couldn't get hold of the Feldal Ravagers, Sean.
I do indeed. You use any other model you can get a hold of. And for me, I used a box of Jackals that I bought at Warhammer Fest. I was intending on using them as like maybe blooded, maybe use them in like a Necromunda gang for myself. And I think I've modeled them in the sweet spot that I can use it for all three, including the Felgor Ravagers themselves.
Wow. That's the ultimate proxy.
Yeah. As I've said before, I'm a huge fan of multi-purpose miniatures. So my Tox Bray is like it's this Ash Wastes World Eater cultist who's running around, but like she's got the gas mask and she's got all of the grenades and like vials stuck to her hip and everything. And everyone else is kind of suitably proxied, I'm sure. We'll see them online at some point if you haven't already. I was pretty excited and got them all done within a week, so we're now at the painting stage. That was only built. You look surprised. That's only built. They're not painted yet. But
I was going to say, but even then, building stage takes me forever. Those mold lines, they're my nemesis.
I tell you what, to be able to get... I'll get on the Jackals models, very few mold lines. These new sculpts are really good for it. There was a couple just like they tucked them away in neat places where it may have already been a border between like an armor plate or a trouser or something. They like tuck it in there. But apart from that, it was minimal at best. Maybe I got a good mold. Good batch.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm kind of excited for that then, because I know you're getting that kit soon, yeah.
I was going to say, well, I'm planning on getting some of those kits for my World Eaters at some point.
Looking forward to seeing some pictures of those, Sean.
I'll send them over after this. But on a World Eaters theme, I finally finished what we're dubbing my Swole Fire Acolyte. which you may have seen online. I'm going to do the horrible thing of posting... This is...
Yes.
He's possessed.
I like.
He's based off the Warhammer Underworld's Gore Hulk. He's got a massive chunky axe, plenty of chains.
I love that axe.
The gladiatorial tabard I was particularly happy with. And then I experimented with some green stuff, trying to like have some fire just combusting on his arm. Because...
There's something that just doesn't feel super chaosy about the word tabard.
Loincloth? That's not particularly offensive.
That's not any better. I think the time when we had a laugh about the idea that you may be chaos, but you still need a belt to hold your trousers up. there's the line for chaos, and that could be it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really happy with this model. Because he is suitably splattered in gore and viscera, and looks like he's about ready to leap into the fray, as all good sorcerers should be.
That should be at the back, casting spells, surely. Not this one, though.
We've got a running joke in the Battle Brothers Discord that he's actually really eloquent and prefers to just sit at the back and hold the cocktail bar. Just keeping it fresh and tidy for when everyone else needs refreshments.
I mean, he's got to be adequate if he's come up with the name Swole Fire
Absolutely. I mean, that's next level thinking.
That really is. It's the D&D meme of my wizard casts fist. But yeah, that's everything I've been up to. I mean, it's plenty. I had Friday off, so I got most of it done then.
Very good. Very good. Well, we're not just here to wet hobby. We also like to play the games. Gregor Jester, have you had any cool games of Kilty lately?
Well, without revealing
no spoilers.
Any spoilers, I can confirm that the last game that we had, which is the one that's currently being edited right now, just through luck of the dice and how the narrative unfolded in the tabletop, ended up what I would have called narratively perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I was writing it as a scene, that's exactly what I would have had happen.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to get it out there.
Oh, wonderful.
Right now, though, our main games have been just for the battle reports. We're about to launch a small series of games where we're going to try and find out Jester's new main team. She's got a few painted up, and you know, we've been playing this for almost 2 years now, and we're still trying to find your main team. So you've got a lot. But...
I do, but for some reason, it's like I've got a lot, and I enjoy playing all of them, but I haven't got one go-to team that I'm like, yes, this is my team. So I'm still trying to find that. So I've got my Harlequins, I've got my World Eaters.
Which can be played as both Legionaries and Assault Intercessors. So we're going to try a series of games to work out which one is going to be Jester's go-to team. Because right now, it's just a little bit of everything.
See which one fits best.
Can we not do a vote, public vote, and you can convince us what should be on, and we vote for your main team?
I'm sure that's not how we do that. I think we should at least, maybe we could put a vote up on the channel, say, what team should Jester try first?
Yeah.
Help Jester find a team. She needs a home.
I do.
Although, I've got to say, when you were saying, like, you know, you're looking for your main team, the first thing that came to my mind is that I don't have one at all, I don't think. I think I'm quite, you know, happy to drift from one to another.
What a fibber.
What do you mean?
You would live and die by your Wormblade when you were playing Wormblade.
Yeah, but you know, we had a lovely summer together, but you know, I've moved on.
Only a fling.
All good things have to come to an end.
Well, you know, I'll go back sometime, I'm sure. It sort of comes to that. I mean, this is an interesting question that's not in our questions, but how many teams do you need?
That's true.
Got something like 8, 9, 10 teams?
Don't know.
How many do you need? Don't need that many, Corbin.
I'm looking over at my hobby shelf now, and they're all merged into, like, it's a full shelf.
You're both looking quite guilty over at the storage in front of you.
Yeah, well, we have a lot. I mean, and that's not even including the bespoke teams that we own, but are still waiting to be even put together, let alone painted. At least we've got easily over 12 teams. Easy. So, yeah, this is why I do have a main team that I favour. But yeah, you can't have enough teams. That's how they hook you in. You tell your friends that this is a cheap game to get into. And then, because it's cheap, it's just one more team.
Yeah.
You know, go on. Why not? Well, yes, I do like the look of the new Beastmen. Let's get some Beastmen.
I do love Beastmen. I'm so excited. When I realised that one of the new teams was going to be Beastmen, I was jumping around a little bit.
I'm sure you could find a way to swap them into your World Eaters.
I'm sure I will.
So, from what I've been led to believe, Little Jester has always been really big into Beastmen.
Yes. Yeah, ever since I was a kid. Beastmen, love them.
That sounds fantastic. We'll await the official version of... Not the version. Well, the official video on your bat rep. Sean, have you got any games in lately?
I've had quite a few, actually. Saying that, I had a TTS game against Warp Coven. We had my World Eaters going up against the Word Bearers. A friend of the show, Nick, his Word Bearers Warp Coven. They're all a bunch of sorcerers running around with some bloodletters, following them in tow, and some legionaries standing in as the rubrics. It's a fantastic team to go against, and Nick is so good at working out when to pull off their psychic powers and tricks, and at what point of the turn or which turn to double down on, because he has gone to extensive lengths with the narrative assets such as the Divine Orrery, and just any way for him to re-roll that initiative roll. He can choose in advance, do I want turn 2 or turn 3? Which one's gonna swing it for me and let me really control the flow of battle? It's a really fun team to play against whenever we go up against each other. And for the first time of me going against them, I won. Not that we care, but I care a little.
It just makes it a little bit sweeter.
Exactly.
All the sweeter when you were.
It was by 1 point, and I had one. I had my heavy gunner left, and he had a sorcerer and a rubric left, and they were just on opposite ends of an Into the Dark board, and just couldn't interact with each other turn four, essentially. So we just played the points. But turn two through three was a bloodbath of fire being called down from the sky, which don't ask me how it works in the Into the Dark, but it does. And then I was just blending through Zangors and pretty much anything I looked at. So we were both left at the start of turn four going, oh my god, like, what do we even do?
Bloodbath followed by a close result, but still a win. Those are always the best games.
Oh yeah, we always say skin of the teeth. That's how we want to play.
Absolutely. Those games where it's really close all the way through to the end are always the most entertaining.
Yeah, Kill Team's good for it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone was complaining when the new Critical Ops involved Critical Ops came in, and everyone's like, we're getting more draws. I was like, well, that's probably a good identifier that you're both as good as each other.
Yes, unfortunately, I'm not convinced those cards exist. We've not seen them on this side of the United States. It's, they've been exceptionally hard to find.
Oh, dear. I know that they came last week. They had 15 minutes of availability on the GW website, and then they went again as, because Jason and I are in the London Wargaming Guild's WhatsApp group. And just like messages going, go, 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 go. They're there, they're there, they're there. If you haven't got them, get them now. And one guy was like, I've already got them, but I'm buying four more so I can just give them to other people.
Man, it's a sorry state of affairs, but I can say 15 minutes is actually pretty good for a Games Workshop product availability these days.
It's almost a lifetime.
We were lucky to snag Gallowfall, but that went almost instantly.
Oh, well done, though.
Oh, yeah, thank you. It's, stressful.
Yeah. Now, Jason, do you want to talk about your game before we talk about what we've been up to today?
Yeah, I think we should only just touch on. Yeah, so I had a really nice game in the week where I had another game with my Croots, partly because I took the wrong ice cream box off the shelf. I was meaning to play them again, but I keep my teams in little ice cream boxes. But they all look the same. So anyway, I played my Croots against some Orc Commandos, and I played against Ricardo, who, if any of you remember our old logo, he was the illustrator of that logo. So thanks, Ricardo. And talking of close games, we had a fantastically close game that pretty much came down to the last two activations on turn four, and it could have gone either way. Those orc boys just snipped it. And I probably shouldn't, but I always I'm always happy when the squig bomb squeak pulls off his move.
You're rooting for it, aren't you?
So this bomb squeak streaked across the table, shrugged off some las fire, and then blew up a couple of my operatives, which was, sad. But it's one of my favourite moves in the game. Anyway, that was really good. And Ricardo's commandos, they're amazingly painted. He's got them with, like, yellow skin. They look so striking. Really, really, really nice. And then the other thing, I guess, to touch on, because I'm actually in person recording this with Sean today, because we've kicked off our campaign where we are going old school. I'm playing Vetguard, and
I'm playing your commandos.
You're playing my commandos, and Sean's having to live with this 2 APL per model malarkey, which I don't think you've ever experienced before.
I've never experienced more than six models, so.
So it's a learning curve. But what our plan is here is we're using the same two teams, and we're going through every mission, every narrative mission in the Morok book. So we played one this morning, and we are on the end of turning point two in our second game. We're mid game. How how appropriate is this with mid-game to record this podcast? Yeah, we're going to do a sort of more of a proper run through on our next episode. But we're very excited. I'm kind of really up for this. This is kind of a slightly different way for us to manage a campaign, but it's excellent.
And just like you said earlier, it the outcomes of the game so far have been narratively appropriate for how we're playing them. And the decisions that we've been making each turn as well.
Always good. So that's gaming this week. Now, if you guys don't mind indulging us, we've got a recent addition to the podcast has been the mailbag section, where we get real mail from real people. Well, real messages from real people. And this is another one in answer to our recent Space Hulkiest Team episode, which, how do we put this, sparked a little bit of controversy. Anyway, we have a lovely letter from Rusted Boltgum. I think his real name's Mike. Anyway, thanks, Mike. And he writes, congratulations on completing Season 1 of OUAKT, and best wishes for Season 2. Good start, strong start. I really enjoyed your adventures in this Grimdark universe. I feel that I must, however, take issue with the low placing of the Wormblade in the recent Space Hulking standings.
Oh dear, Jason.
Let me explain. You'd think I'd be up for the Wormblade. Anyway, while Space Hulk started out with Terminators versus Gene Stealers, it expanded with the Deathwing and Gene Stealer to include Coven-based enemies. The Deathwing rulebook had artwork with hybrids, as they were known back then, against Terminators in a Hulk. But it wasn't until Gene Stealer that hybrids were formally introduced and incorporated into the missions. More recently, the Warhammer Plus series Angels of Death had Brood Coven forces attack a docked Blood Angel's ship with the intent to destroy it. So whilst the Hulk isn't the natural background, and that wasn't a Hulk in the animation, they may have a good reason to be on the ship. I like to think they might also try and leave a planet to spread the word and just get stuck in a Hulk like the Galador. But who should be demoted in their stead? I would say I'm not sure anyone actually needs to get demoted, but I like the fact that there's a DK in here. For me, the Felgors need to be demoted. Do beastmen have the wit for interstellar travel? Wouldn't they be more likely to be turned to chaos on a planet? Who knows? But it's fun to think about. I don't know. I think there's a good case there. Maybe I should have made the Wormblade a bit more space hulky. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, I think he makes a good case there for that. He's brought source material. He's referenced various different areas that he's found this information.
I mean, if this was a court of law, he's made a really strong argument.
Absolutely.
I mean, as much as I love the team and their lore and their aesthetics, especially as they appear a lot on the 40k role-playing side of things, when it comes to demoting any team for whether or not they're suitable in, like, for the narrative of Kill Team, for me, it's always novitiates. I can never, ever think of a good reason for novitiates to be doing what they're doing.
You're exactly right. Jason agrees on that one.
Yeah, it's my sort of slight bugbear in this, and I can't quite get over it. But and like I said again, this is a fantastic way to comment on the show. I'm going to have to eat some more humble pie. Keep it coming, folks. We're always happy to have comments, even when it makes me look terrible.
especially then.
But what we've got next, and what you've all been waiting for, is the main topic of the show. Special guests, as ever, get the special questions. Now, you two are in for either a treat or something else. We've got some new questions to go with some of our old classic questions. I can't really, I don't know if you're fully aware of this, but there are right and wrong answers. So,
okay.
I don't know. We haven't thrown anyone off the show yet, but, you know, it would be awkward because we love you guys. But, you know, rules is rules. You know, I don't make the rules. That's just how it is. So
this is the first time for everything.
I was going to say, hopefully we keep the Inquisition happy here.
Yeah, they're a tough bunch, tough crowd. Okay, right, Sean, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I will. Now we'll just get both of you to answer at the same time because it may be easier than asking all the questions twice. So chime in if you're feeling particularly thoughtful. But between the two of you, have you got a favorite 40K faction, or do you differ in opinion?
I've got a very very strong like for the Inquisition personally. The Inquisition in 40K is one of the very few, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say equal opportunity factions, but if you can do the job and you have the right Inquisitor, they're going to look the other way if you can get the work done. And I just find their goals and the way they go about their goals very, very interesting myself, especially once you get into all the different reasons why Inquisitors might not like each other with the different philosophies. From a lore perspective, I find the Inquisition the most interesting. Like, how do the monodominants like go up against the Thorian-based Inquisitors, which is something I love exploring in the lore. But I don't think the Inquisition's particularly your favorite, is it, Jester?
No, not really. This was actually probably the hardest thing for me to think of. I would say I kind of jump around a little bit when it comes to favorite factions. Like, for example, right now, anything to do with World Eaters, Demons, and Angron, I am all about it right now. So that's kind of where I am.
I agree.
Those feedbacks at the Easter. Yeah, this does go back to your earlier thing about still trying to find a main, I feel.
Yeah, I'm really terrible at picking a particular thing. I'm kind of like a magpie. I'm like, ooh, shiny.
It's because we've been doing it for so long now. We've been doing this together since what? We've been playing like WoW since what, 2004 together? So we've kind of touched upon each of the factions a little
bit
in all that time. So, trying to nail down a favorite can be tricky sometimes.
However, I'm going to tell you first answers and Inquisition World Eaters. Both very cool. You've passed the first question.
Yes. Yeah, cool. Relief.
All right. Now, this one, frankly, trips people up. So, you know, question two. It's the classic Once Upon a Kill Team question. Which Primarch is the coolest?
It's Lionel Johnson, sorry, but he's Tywin Lannister with an Arthurian theme. Like, what's not to love?
Yeah, I don't want to be too normy about it. So, when I was looking at this, it's like, the coolest Primarchs, maybe not necessarily my favorite, but when it comes to 30k, in terms of aesthetics and looks and just that go-get-them attitude, for me, it's the Khan. I love the whole Mongolian thing, and he's amazing. But when it comes to 40k, coolest, yeah, the whole Tywin Lannister lion thing, that's, for me, the imagery of that. I've just finished reading Son of the Forest, which is an amazing book.
That's great.
So I think he's maybe the coolest. But, and I think we're going to get a few groans here, I think my favorite Primarch is not the 30k version, but the 40k version of old Bobby G himself, Ribute Gila.
Really?
Yes. Why? I know. That's a spicy take, right? It's because when I was reading the Black Library novels, they've managed to take this genetically engineered superhuman in this grimdark millennium and made him our eyes and ears. He is the one with a reasonable point of view. And, you know, it's the fact when he looks at the Imperium and is going, what the hell is going on here? And
I don't want anybody in the 40k universe being reasonable.
This is it. This is why it really helps, like, punch, like, highlight those points. In the first Dawn of Fire book, I'm paraphrasing slightly, but a servitor walks into the room And he's like, what the hell is this?
Which is just so relatable. And, you know, 40K, what makes it so special is that nothing really is that relatable. It's this horribly, like, horrific universe. But the fact that we have this, like, demigod, though he would argue against that, that is somewhat relatable to me, just really helped emphasize the horrors of the universe, but through his eyes. And that gave me an appreciation for what I previously believed was the most boring crime arc. So yeah, Lionel Johnson and 40K, the whole Arthur thing is the coolest, but yeah, I had to give a spicy take there for my current favorite, Bobby G. Plus, who can't relate to seeing an impossible situation at work and putting a brave face on it? And like, no, it's okay. No, yeah, I can totally deal with this.
It's all those planets going red. The dog sat inside of the house that's on fire, just going, "This is fine."
Exactly right. That's old Bobby G right now.
I've really enjoyed the representation of Gilliman in the Dark Imperium series. If you've read those as well, with him versus Mortarion.
Yes.
And especially it kind of fed into your love of the Inquisition there, Gregor, as well, where he's like trying to create his own agents to just see what's going on in the Imperium at large, but also try and subvert it in some way.
Exactly, and how the Inquisition and him aren't necessarily going to be fully aligned at times.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, so I would never say Bobby G was the coolest, but there's stuff about him that I really like. And that's why right now he's the one I enjoy reading about the most.
I'm conflicted, because obviously Jagatullah Khan was the correct answer. Mm-hmm. Could have left it there. And then
that had to make the job harder.
Oh, my word. Because the gully man is obviously the most basic of all of them. But you kind of almost changed my mind on him. It's kind of terrible. And Tywin L. Johnson, I used to think was just a bit uptight, but they definitely improved his image when he's awakened and had his, you know, new story.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job with that, with making him kind of a little bit more reflective and thinking about, like, hey, was I a dick?
Hey, the
dick.
So probably something we can all learn there, I imagine. All right. Well, there were some shaky moments in the middle, but I think you both rallied successfully. We can pass you on that one. It's not an easy question, that one. So fair dues.
Now, I think we could guess Jester's answer on this one, but I don't know. After those answers, we might be in for a surprise. But if you had to, which Chaos God would you worship?
So I think, to no one's surprise here, it would be Khorne. But my actual reasoning for this is it goes back to when I was much, much younger and my first experiences of playing 40K with my brother. So I would have been like 5. And he always insisted on playing Slaanesh during the whole Realm of Chaos games. And I had to be Khorne and I had no choice about it. Like, it was your Khorne. And thus I have maintained this like love of Khorne all the way through,
because you had to.
So now, because I had to and I had no choice.
Yeah, for me, well, I'm gonna give a different reason, but it's Khorne as well. And that wasn't always the case. I think like as a younger man I would have gone with Tzeentch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the clever choice, like ambition, power, get all of these magical powers and stuff. But there's a couple of reasons why I have swapped my allegiance to Khorne. First of all, in a very meta sense, Jester and I have just finished a very, very long, like 9-year process of getting ourselves established on the other side of the world, changing careers and putting all of these big plans into motion. And after like 9 years of it, I'm kind of done. I want simplicity now.
You're sick of the plan.
Khorne is this. Yes, I'm sick of the planning. And Khorne is this simple choice. with Zinch, you do a good job, and then one day he'll gift you, like, oh, I've got eyes growing out of my chest. Oh, there's feathers all along my back. Whereas with Khorne, it's very simple. You crush your enemies, he rewards you. And you might get incredibly jacked and swole, or you might get a nice set of horns to gore your enemies with, but he's not going to trick you. At least not like in the same way Zinch would. Kill enemies, get bacon. That's what it is. So yeah, Khorne, because life's complicated enough.
We need a couple of t-shirts there. And I quite like, you kill your enemies, get bacon. That's a great line. If you don't do some merch with that, I think we should. That is excellent. Well, got to pass you on that one. That was some some excellent cases there. I definitely like the idea of just if you want the simple life, you know, just go Khorne.
This is it.
Yeah, can't argue too much with that one. Now, here we've got some new questions now. So I've got a theory, a little bit of a theory, that there are that each player in Kill Team is either predominantly sneaky or killy. Okay, or you like teams that are sneaky and teams that are killy. So would you describe yourself predominantly as sneaky or killy?
Killy.
Yeah, that was instant on. Khorne is the simple answer.
About it. I'm kind of exactly on that whole. Khorne is the simple answer. You know, even when I'm playing computer games where you're supposed to sneak around the side or whatever, I'll just end up charging down the middle. It's like my great flaw.
Yeah, the jester approach. That's a really, really good question. I would like to say killy, but honestly, it's more sneaky, and that's partly because I've been playing a lot of Kazakin recently.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try and go for... Now, admittedly, they're actually quite a bit better following their balance pass. But if you try and go for the glorious super elite soldier, almost power fantasy with the Kazakin, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been... with my recent kill teams, I've been very much the sneaky kind, and that kind of reflects my player choices when I'm playing video games as well. So yeah, I don't mind killy teams. In fact, I quite enjoy them, but I definitely have a leaning towards the sneaky side of things.
Okay, that seems good. I mean, that kind of riff. I mean, it came about really because with Sean and myself, he's definitely the killy player, and I'm definitely the there you are. Orc Stodies. I've got no. Cause I think that's what you need to know. Whereas I think I'm more a sneaky boy. Anyway, those are good answers. I like that. Okay. Go to Space Marine chapter.
So, for me, I would normally have answered, I would originally have always answered Raven Guard. Because when when I got back into playing 40k with Gregor back in the day, then that was actually the Space Marine chapter that I collected, and I had quite a large Raven Guard army, and Caven Strike was the very reason I collected that entire army. But now, with the whole Dark Angels, Arthurian lore, Knight stuff going on, I may be converted.
Yes, that's fair. You love your Knights, don't you?
I do. I'm such a sucker for it. Like, just stick it there and you can just have my money.
Yep. For me, that's actually something that has changed over the years. Originally, back in the day, as it were, it would have been Space Wolves. Especially back when, like, I don't know if you guys ever read the William King trilogy of Space Wolves.
I haven't.
And they were very much... Yeah, those were among some of the earliest Black Library books. They came out around the time, like, the first Gaunt's Ghost books. And at that point, you know, they were Space Vikings. With, like, drinking mead, fighting with axes and bolt guns, and they were fantastic. But recently, I feel Games Workshop maybe have gone slightly overboard with the whole wolf thing.
Yeah.
So, no, not Space Wolves anymore. For me, and again, this is almost going to seem like in stark contrast to my Gilliman answer earlier, but the Black Templars.
Ooh.
Why? Well, first of all, they are... Just the aesthetics, the knightly aesthetic is amazing, but they really emphasize the horrors of 40k. Black Templars are the good guys, except they're really not.
No.
If you're coming to be saved by Space Marines, and it's like the Black Templar is just like, all right, guess I'll die then.
Yeah. And
that for me, that really emphasizes. You can't get much more 40k than the Black Templars, and their whole Primaris refresh. Those models are off.
Yeah.
The only reason I don't have a full Black Templar army is I've got enough Black Powered armies in my collection, but one day it might happen.
I absolutely love that Emperor's Champion model.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And the one based off the, I can't remember what it's called now.
Oh, Bayard's Revenge.
Having a moment. No, the one where it's not Emperor's Champion, it's the one based off the third edition box set art.
The Castellan.
Castellan?
Yeah.
Yes. Because I started right at the end of second edition 40k, and by right at the end, I mean the third edition box came out like 4 or 5 weeks after I started.
Yeah.
So that, for me, that image is very much my 40k. And so, yeah, I'm very fond of that model.
And if I could just add, I think you've got a painting video on you putting together your Black Templar kill team, I think. And
yep, that's right.
And I really loved it. I don't think I'm naturally drawn to the Black Templars, but I'd say you going through that in that video with all the chains and everything. You almost had me convinced, I'd say.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. And that video in of itself was kind of inspired by Ben at Battle Brothers Tabletop, because he was getting involved in the Green Stuff game, which I'm notoriously bad at. So it's like, you know what, I'm going to start simple. Get some Black Templars and just put candles on them.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really liked up how I really liked how they turned out. Fun team.
Oh, too right.
Very fun team to paint.
Jester, you're going to have to do a Ravenwing all on bikes, but you're going to have to put them on horses for your Arthurian cavalry.
Oh my god, I hadn't thought of that. That is amazing. Yes.
There we go, new project.
Okay, so this one, moving away from factions, what's your favourite terrain to play kill team on? Everyone's got their leanings.
Well, yeah, without question, Into the Dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, Into the Dark. I've always wanted decent-looking interior terrain that wasn't just 2D corridors. Into the Dark gave that. And the claustrophobic nature. I mean, I love open boards as much as anyone else, but for me, the narrative and what's going on the tabletop is extra strong when I get down to the eye height of the models and I see what's going on. And Into the Dark really sells that. Plus, let's face it, we don't have to worry about vantage point rules on Into the Dark, which is great. So it's kind of the downside to Into the Dark, and I know you guys mentioned this in one of your previous episodes, is yes, it can take a very long time to tear down, which is like one of the downsides when you're done with a game. On the plus side, when you are setting up an Into the Dark board, the mission tells you how to set up the terrain. There's no trying to balance the terrain out, going for a mix of what looks good but what's also balanced.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at the moment, Into the Dark, but it has been a year of Into the Dark games for us now, so
yeah.
We are due for an open board. I want really open, I want Junkles.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
I don't think I'm alone in the community with that. I think we're all crying out for Jungles, aren't we? Jungles and Tyranids and you, Catechen.
Well, we've got a bet right in writing on it, and that's, is it going to be Jungle? I'm nervous. That was good. I mean, Into the Dark is definitely very photogenic. I still haven't got quite over sanding down all the tabs. It's sort of fallen in my memory.
That's traumatic. It was a traumatic experience.
All right. Now, this seems like a light question, but obviously there's a wrong answer. So, what is the best kill team pet? And there's a follow-up question. Is there a pet that we haven't got yet that you'd like to see?
Do you want to go first on this one? Because I've got some ideas, at least on what I'd like to see.
So, for me, I mean, I'm always fond of the Cyber Mastiffs. So, I was pleased to see one of those with the RBTs. But also, I like birds. So, I'm quite fond of the one of the birds that you get with the corsairs.
You're catered.
Yeah, that's my choices. Yeah, that's my specific choice as well. So we've been like talking to you guys here, we've been desperately hitting the mute button and unmuting because we have parrots. And editing out parrot sounds from a battle report takes a surprising amount of time.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, we've got three of them as well. And they're adorable. And right now, you know, they're flying around in the lounge wondering where are we and why are we not paying them any attention. So, yeah, space parrots for the win. And as for what I'd like to see, and this goes back all the way to the 4th edition 40k rulebook when I first saw art for it. I think it was the 4th edition rulebook. I can't remember what they're called, but the cat species the Elder have. The
Phalanx?
The Phalanx, yeah.
The Phalanx are the ones from Necromunda. It is the Gyrinx.
There you go. So, I mean, yes, I know some people are starting to feel that maybe Kilting's feeling a little bit like Pokemon. Throwing your pets out to do battle. And I get that. I totally do. But I do like seeing this more domestic side of 40k because this is why I love the role-playing side and the Inquisition. I love street-level stuff. And you see animals on the streets. I want to see what it looks like.
Absolutely. And I love that aspect as well. But I also feel like I'm not sure it's domestic to be like, okay, go on, kitty, go and murder someone.
In 40k, that's totally domestic. Totally domestic. yeah, that's it for that question, I feel. I mean, I'm sure we're going to see something quite exotic. But just to please War Boss Emmanuel, the squig is the best choice.
Squigs are awesome.
And they come in every shape and size, so tailors for everything.
Squig for everything.
Absolutely.
Well, pleased to say you made it through the general section. Flying colours, some excellent answers there. You're still in the game. You're still in the game. So we're on to kill teamy questions now. So we asked this of everybody, and you clearly play a lot. So what is it about kill team specifically that got you into it and what keeps you playing?
Oh, so, I mean, how long do you have? Is the honest answer.
2 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to tell you my top two things, and then I'll pass it over to Jester. So the first one, the bespoke teams. I love the bespoke teams. My favorite part of Kill Team is when they reveal a sub faction team that I've not seen before, or they've got models I can use in the role playing stuff, like the Navy Breachers, the Voidsmen. Those would have been amazing to have during our Rogue Trader games. Yeah. Seeing the RBTs. I mean, I've been wanting RBTs since I saw them in second edition to have them back. And just being able to explore that aspect of 40k slightly away from the battlefield, doing these operations, is what really attracted me to the game in the first place. But what keeps me in the game is the modern design. We play a lot of games outside of Games Workshop, and they've got a lot of modern design mechanics that might be missing from, like, say, mainline 40k, but Kill Team has a lot of those. The alternate activations, the very, very slick dice rolls and stuff, and everything's done really, really quickly. Yeah, some bits are a tiny bit clunky, like line of sight, but overall, we are mainly narrative players, but I enjoy the rules of Kill Team so much. If I had to go and specialize on a game to get good at it on a competitive side of things, it would be Kill Team. It's the first Games Workshop game I've played in a very long time where I can enjoy the game purely for the rules, not just the rules and the lore together. It's just a very, very strong game that I really enjoy.
Yeah, and for me, so what I love is I love the ability to collect the different kill teams, but by that I mean have a chance to give something a go that you wouldn't necessarily want to collect an entire army of. It really gives you the opportunity to go try something, paint something new, maybe something that you would never normally go ahead and actually build or paint or whatever. So that's really cool. And then I also love how it's very skills focused. So, you know, it's not all about did you build the best list. Obviously, there is a certain amount of list building, but you're not going to live and die just by the list. There is also then how do your tactics work? How do the individual models all interact with each other? And I think it gives a game that is really easy to learn, but has tons of depth. So that's kind of what keeps me coming back to it.
Very good. No qualms there.
I couldn't have put it better myself, to be honest.
It's the fact that the mechanics allow you to do what the character would be doing anyway. There's very little, at least in my experience, dissonance between what should be going on in your head and then what you get the models to do. The mechanics allow you to express that action narratively, which is a sign of good game design, I feel.
Yeah, there's almost an aspect of it, because I know you two are very hot on your RPGs as well. And Jason and I talked about it, where like we could almost play an RPG but then use Kill Team as like the combat mechanic of it. So like, absolutely, we've gotten up to this point. Now we do this battle, and then we can move on from that afterwards. I mean, that's almost how we play our narrative games anyway, isn't it, Jason?
No, this is all good. This is all good. You're still in the game?
Okay, just holding on there. That's good.
So I know we touched on it earlier, but if you have to choose, which is your favourite team to play at the moment? Who's either got the most fun mechanics, or you're just enjoying kind of living that thematic fluff?
Do you want to go first on this one? Or...
Yeah, I mean, so I've been playing a lot of Nurgle teams recently, and I am not a huge fan of the Plague God, but clearly he blesses me. And I've really been enjoying playing those teams, because I get to roll a lot of fives and sixes with them.
So this is hard for me to reconcile, Jester and I. Well, actually, you're still in the industry, but with me, former scientists. And Jester rolls an uncanny number of fives and sixes when she needs to roll fives and sixes. Like in our first Kill Team narrative battle report, you have to make 13 5 plus feel on those saves, and you made 10 of them.
Yep.
Wow. And that is not a particularly rare occurrence. So, yeah, doesn't surprise me at all. Those are your favourite teams to play at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, Nurgle blesses me.
Yeah, for me, straight up, it's Legionaries. I feel Legionaries have it's where it's at. They've got interesting list builds, but they're simple as well. There's only 6 models. So you can try lots of different things, but none of those things feel overwhelming, because you're only controlling 6 operatives. And of all of the kill teams I've played, Legionaries are the ones that I keep coming back to, simply because those are the ones I have the most fun with.
Yeah. Can't argue with either of those, especially with the I always roll 5 and 6s on field. Can't get past that one.
It's a skill.
It is.
Right, now we've done favourites, but we all have a nemesis team, something that either we find hard to play or don't like. So do you have a nemesis team that, you know, really grinds you?
They could also do exceptionally well against you whenever you play.
Yeah, so for me, I would actually say that overall, I actually think that the kill team is well balanced enough that I haven't yet come across a team that I would say is my absolute nemesis. I would say that I always get a little bit nervous when I'm playing Legionaries, as in against Legionaries, because they always seem to have something going on that I didn't remember from the last game or whatever, and I'm like, what? What are you doing? But yeah, so...
Yeah, that's a good question. So when you said, what team is your nemesis, I was instantly thinking, what team do I dread going up against? Mm. Which, very clearly, it's any Nurgle team Jester plays, because of those, that high number of 5 and 6 issue rolls. It could be just regular Nurgle Chaos Demons, or, God forbid, Gellipox infected. That's always exciting. But in terms of when it comes to playing them, the jury's still out on this, because I'm definitely having more fun now since the balance update. But the Kazakin, absolutely love the models. I love the operatives. But in order, they're not a hard team to play. Pre-balance update anyway. But to do well with them, you really had to play your heart out. To the point where I was going, huh, yeah, okay, I'm doing okay with them, but I don't know if I'm having fun, because it's really stressful to try and win off them. Basically, my experience was exactly the same as Reese's from Three's the Wound. I can't say that's fair anymore, though, since the balance updates. Okay, admittedly, I've only done one game, but I was positively drowning in elite points, and with that many elite points, you can do a lot with them. So, yeah, jury's out on which team I don't like playing at the moment. But in terms of going up against, yeah, anything when Jest is playing, if it has a 5+ feel, no pain, man, that's rough.
Fair enough.
Okay, so if we've found out your favorite kill teams, now do you have a single favorite operative? Who's your go-to? Who's your MVP? Who is the one model that you can rely on every single time?
So for me right now, that would be the thrice cursed from the Gellipox. One, because he's so cheery. All of his three faces are so happy. He obviously loves what he does. And, you know, who doesn't enjoy being around someone that happy? And then there's the fact that he shoots fire from his gut and it always kills stuff. So yeah. That guy. He's great.
The 19 wounds, he's very hard to put down.
Yep.
Yep.
Especially with 5+ feel no pain.
I really like his dinky little legs that come out from underneath him.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro definitely skips leg day.
No. I love the idea of he looks happy on all three of his faces. So that's cool. This is all good stuff. Right. I just want to tell you now, you passed. You're inaugurated, you're in the club, you know, you can do no wrong. Well done. Not everyone,
big relief,
you know, can get through this so easily, but no, you've done fantastic. We've got some questions specifically for you, and the first one, and I've been following this, and I'm pretty excited. So you've been doing a kill team narrative campaign, and we've touched this a couple of times, but can you tell us a little bit about you know, the backstory of the campaign? Who are the teams? How's it set up?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this first kill team narrative campaign of ours actually is my second idea. The original idea was going to be setting the campaign during the Noctis Eterna. The Cicatrix Maledictum's just burst open. What would that look like on an Imperial planet? But then I started asking myself, what would it look like leading up to that? Plus, when it comes to the whole sci-fi thing, my favorite trope in sci-fi is spooky spaceships.
Yeah.
So I was like, no, okay, new idea. And it's going to involve a spooky spaceship, the Prosperous Dawn, as it's named in the campaign. And it's set in the closing hours of the 41st millennium. Literally, like, hours before the Cicatrix Maledictum is going to, like, burst wide open. And what I wanted to do is, like, okay, why are they going here? Why is there a spooky spaceship? And what's the tie-in with the Cicatrix Maledictum? So I brought in my favorite factions. I brought in the Inquisition and Rogue Traders. And they're meeting up. The Cadia hasn't fallen yet. But the Ordos are getting worried. And they've been doing research on the Cadian pylons to try and see what they can do to try and close the ever-widening breach. But as we know from the lore, the Necropylons are very, very resistant to that. And the Inquisitor in the campaign, Solomon Thrice, he has a contact, a rogue trader who claims on her world she's got these vast resources of this mineral, which when they look at the analysis of it, seems a lot like raw, neat blackstone. And the campaign opens with them doing a rendezvous to try and retrieve the sample so that he can do some research on it to see if he can help the situation on Cadia. Unfortunately, as the campaign opens, the ship is completely silent. It appears derelict, so he has to send out his Kazakin team
to board the ship and work out what's going on. And then, like all good spooky spaceships, it's not actually derelict.
No.
And all of the crew being horribly mutated, something's gone wrong, and it's full of Gellipops infected. And what that setting does is it allows me to bring in a bunch of different factions. We've already seen two published so far, so the Kill Team, so the Kazakin, Gellipots Infected, and now, because this is not a spoiler because people have seen it on the promo shots, Chaos Demons.
Yep.
But we've got a couple of other teams coming up. One of which, if you play the 40k RPGs, specifically Rogue Trader, you should get really excited about, because I found some very good models which proxy one of the factions, or races almost, that are in that game, which we've never seen before in Warhammer 40,000.
Oh, fantastic.
And I'm very excited to reveal those. I won't say who they are
yet, but
I was very, very happy when I found those models.
This is a great teaser. I could just say, I think that background is fantastic. That's so evocative. And yeah, you've got me intrigued, and even more intrigued with what might be coming. That sounds great.
Well, yeah, thank you. It comes from my love of, like I said, spooky spaceships, whether it's Alien Isolation, it's a classic game like that, Dead Space, obviously. Yeah. So, yeah, have to do a narrative campaign with those themes.
Oh, perfect. Now, stepping away from the fluff and the story of the game, how are you two specifically going about, like, calculating the operative's experience, or are you doing spec ops that you're progressing? Are you accumulating battlons as you go along?
That's so that's a really good question. One of the initial problems that we had to solve when we started to film it, because we were doing something separate. We were doing a Galagark expedition for fun between us.
Yeah.
And we tried the spec ops back when Altarius first launched. Mm-hmm. And I think we quickly came to the conclusion that spec ops doesn't really work for YouTube, because it's too much of a slow burn.
You need so many games. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It has to be run over such a long period of time. It doesn't really work for what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. If people wanted to see, like, you know, operatives dying and getting promotions, it'll be like almost a year's worth of battle reports before we saw anything. So we've gone for because of the condensed nature, if you win the game, you get a benefit, sometimes two benefits. So normally it is a battle honor. You choose the MVP and they get a battle honor. But also the loser of a given game also gets to do that with their MVP. So it's usually the winning team will get to choose two, the loser will get to choose one. Sometimes it's not always a battle honor. At the end of the first game, the Kazakin were able to set up their command center within the Prosperous Dawn, so they actually got the command center strategic asset, which is one of the Kazakin dedicated ones, which gives them extra elite points because they're planning their operations out. But we're doing the battle scars, the intro system, as is. So that seems to be okay, but we're doing it without the requisition point system. So if anyone rolls a death, they will actually die.
Yeah.
There's no spending one RP, which you always get anyway, to ignore that. So yeah, we're kind of doing our own thing whilst using inspiration from the actual rules, just because with the nature of a campaign on YouTube, people would lose interest over that many games, because as like I said, it'll take a year to get anywhere meaningful.
I'd do it for a year. Speaking for myself, I think that's a really good approach. I mean, I think we mentioned earlier that we just sort of kicked off our own campaign, and where we've drifted a little bit away from the strict narrative spec up rules.
Yeah, the rules written.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll go into more in depth about that next week. But I think you're right that you've got to do what you feel works for you.
I would describe those rules as almost good. They've almost got it, but maybe it just takes them maybe a tad too long.
Yeah.
Yeah,
five games is a lot of games.
Yeah. And that's just to see the first.
The first bullet point.
That's just for the first one.
So just to say, if you haven't done so already, I really urge you listeners to check out these bat reps. I mean, they're just excellent bat reps anyway.
But the fact that you've got this story going certainly gets my juices going. So do check that out if you haven't done already. And then I've got another slightly Kill Team adjacent question for you. So Sean and I really into narrative. We sort of to either small or large extent build kind of narrative elements into Kill Team, which you've said is, you know, it's a competitive game as well, if you want it to be that. We ourselves now have discussed the idea of role playing games, right? You know, the idea of, can we take our favourite characters and sort of be proper role play in them. And this is something that you've really been looking at lately, and it sounds like you've been into for quite some time. And there are a couple of systems. I know you've got a very in-depth video on your channel, so I'd urge other people to check that out too. But could you just sort of mention how you've your experiences with RPG, particularly 40K RPG, and what's out there for people?
Oh yeah, well, I think what I'll do is I'll describe what's out there currently for people, because it actually has a long, rich history that the role-playing community is aware of, but the wargaming side of Warhammer 40,000, that community seems lesser aware of.
Yeah.
And then I think if you chime in with like some of the more notable stories that are suitable for all ages, because 40K role-playing can get pretty dark.
Yeah.
But long story short, Warhammer 40,000 role-playing, it was the ultimate end goal for exploring the narrative of 40K. When people ask you what part of the hobby do you prefer, you know, the painting, the playing, or the building, I often think, well, all of those things, but really it's the lore. And when you play these narrative games, especially the role-playing side of stuff, you get to explore the lore. Right now, 40K role-playing is in a great spot. It's got this long, like, legacy of games, and right now there are two current systems being published by the same company, Cubicle 7, who make lovely products, by the way, and they offer two very different experiences depending on what your players and yourself as Games Master want to achieve. What kind of story do you want to tell? For example, if you wanted to do something that felt a bit more like Kill Team, and you are dealing with stuff on the battlefield or behind enemy lines, and using the kind of characters that you see on the tabletop, Wrath and Glory is the game that you want to play. It's definitely lighter with the rules, and it emphasizes high moments of action. Your characters are pretty, pretty tough, and you can do really epic things. Like, you can get involved like in a high-speed chase, and your Space Marine can jump off their rhino, grapple an orc on their orc truck, punch him in the face, throw him overboard, and carry on from there. It's the emphasis is on high action, the characters are very strong, and they're usually very, very competent. Wrath and Glory can do lower-scale games as well, where you are just playing, like, say, Hive Street gangers in the dirt, and it's a much more like street-level game. But that's a little bit like forcing a round peg into a square hole, however the phrase goes. For that, you want the other game, Imperium Maledictum. Imperium Maledictum is their latest game. They've just launched it.
Mm-hmm.
And this game is built off the legacy of the previous six Warhammer 40,000 role-playing games and Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the current version. And this is much more of a simulationist-style game. If you ever wanted to experience what it would be like to experience the Warhammer 40,000 universe through your own eyes, walking it in your own shoes, or create a very relatable character, that's the game for you. You're not necessarily a Space Marine. You are much, much lower than that. You might be a Voidsman on an Imperial Navy ship. You might be a someone who, like, a tax clerk for the office for the Adeptus Ministratum.
Yeah, that faction being an option in Imperium Maledictum was one of my favorite things that I saw when I started reading through that. The fact that you can actually just go ahead and create a tax collector or something. It's great.
And it's not just that low, but it's very much street level. You can definitely, like, go through the ranks and be high up in your organization, especially once the Inquisition recruits you. And I'm hoping they're going to do what they did with the previous games and include an expansion path to eventually, maybe one day, become like a high-level Inquisitor. But the difference is, compared to Wrath and Glory, your characters are much, much more fragile. If you don't prepare for a gunfight properly, you take the wrong hit to your body and your arm's just going to be blown off. You know, you've got to get that replaced. If you don't die of shock. There are very deep rules for becoming warp corrupted, whether you get malignancies of the mind or actual like mutations on your flesh, which can be more or less subtle depending on what you roll. You'll be very, very unlucky if you roll like a tentacle arm straight away, because that's probably going to be the end for your character there, unless they can somehow keep it hidden. So Imperium Maledictum, it is a much more brutal, gritty take on the universe. And in the role-playing community, we call it a much more simulationist style game. The rules are more in-depth, they're more granular, and you know, you're going to be working out where you can get your weapons from, where you're going to be lodging for the night, spying on your enemies, creating plans of attack, in much more detail than, say, Wrath and Glory. So it really depends on the type of experience you want. High action or street level stuff. Either game can do either approach, but they've got their specializations in mind.
Yep.
Imperium Maledictum street level, high action would be Wrath and Glory.
Oh, fantastic.
Are you able to use any of your, you know, kill team minis in these games, or is it all theatre of the mind thing?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, what's awesome about both of these systems is that you can do as much theatre of the mind as you'd like. You can use your minis as much as you like. So if you want to have a game where you've got awesome terrain setups and you've each got miniatures and you've got your enemies and everything, and you play it all on the terrain with those minis, you can do that. You can do the entire system that way. Or if you prefer not to do any of that and you just want to do theater of the mind, that's also completely acceptable. Or you can do a little mix of both. So if you want to do your interactions, so when you're going around, you're finding out information and bits and pieces like that, you want to do that in theater of the mind. But then you want to do your battles and your events with minis, then you can absolutely do that as well.
The great thing about Imperium Maledictum is they've actually got rules for doing both when it comes to combat.
Okay.
The ways they deal with range changes depending if you're using miniatures or if you're doing theater in the mind.
Very
cool. Because in the past, it was range in the old 40k RPGs was just dealt a bit like it was dealt with in Dungeons & Dragons. Hard numbers. Which is fine when you're playing miniatures on a map, but when you're doing it theater of the mind, if you're not an experienced games master, you might try and do it rules as written, trying to keep, okay, in relation to player A, enemy number one is 72 meters away, enemy number two is like only 30 meters away, and it can get very, very hard to keep track of it. Whereas in Imperium Maledictum, what they've done is something very clever. They've kept hard ranges for miniatures. But if you're going to do it theater of the mind, they've done something which you see in a lot of games now, a lot of new RPGs. They use abstract zones. So you split the battlefield into zones, and then like the zone you're in, it would be like close range. The next zone would be medium range. The zone beyond that would be long range. And that becomes a lot easier to track enemy positions in relation to the players, because you don't have to worry about exact numbers, just a general feel of how far they are away. So yeah. If you want to do impromptu combat, I would totally run it theater of the mind, but then for your big action set piece combat, that's when the maps, the terrain, the miniatures come out, and you make it a proper event, and yeah, we can get some really, really fun combats out of it. We've just finished wrapping up a Rogue Trader campaign, using the original Rogue Trader rules, which was the second 40k RPG to come out, which was a lot of fun, and we used a lot of miniatures for that. I think we've got some photos of that up on our Instagram. I'll have to have a look.
Yeah.
But yeah, you absolutely can use kill team miniatures for it, and I would actually go so far as to say they are perfect for it. Because a lot of the characters you can be are represented in miniature form, especially the new Inquisition team that they've just revealed.
Yeah, and I was actually going to say that, to your point, you know, that's one of the things that you love about kill team, is the fact that you do get to see miniatures of these factions that you don't normally see in the wider 40k, and that gives you really good options for the RPGs.
This is why I was such a big fan of the Blackstone Fortress game, because the models were perfect for a Rogue Trader campaign. So that's what we did.
Nice.
And your Rogue Trader ended up enjoying himself quite a lot.
Yes.
So is this something you're going to be talking about on your channel? Can we follow any of your sort of campaigns in this front?
Absolutely. We've got quite a lot of plans, don't we?
We do.
So there is an end goal in sight. But just like when it came to when I first started creating the battle reports are now where I wanted them to be, but they didn't start off like that. There's a number of technical and skill-based hurdles I need to get out of the way first to work out how to get to my end goal. But long story short, the first type of content that we're making for Imperium Maledictum is very much like the podcast or video podcast style show that we've just launched, where we're going to be going into each facet of the game in a bit more detail. I'm going to be doing a 40k Games Master tip series, because right now it's all very much slanted towards Dungeons and Dragons. I'm 40k that up a bit. I'm going to be doing like a tutorial series using miniatures to help teach people how to play Imperium Maledictum. But then the end goal is very much play sessions, a campaign, and then work out a way to shoot them to make it look interesting and then heavily edit them down, just like we do with our battle reports.
Sounds amazing. Well, I'm really looking forward to that.
That's a lot to look forward to, especially because the effort that you do put into your battle reports, they're always, especially with these narrative ones, I feel like you've kicked it up to a whole new level. They're just a joy to watch, and you feel like you're in the thick of it yourself. It's immersive. That's what I'm looking for. It's all immersive. So I can't
Thank
wait.
You.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're going for. I wanted to make the battle reports I wanted to watch, and for me, the number one thing when it comes to our toy soldier games is immersion. That's why we do it, right?
Yeah.
We've told stories, and that's what we try and do with our battle reports.
Well, you won me over. Well, you know, you've answered all the questions. You passed. You're now a once upon a kill team, you know, alumni. You're in the club now. And I just want to say it's been an absolute pleasure having you guys on the podcast. I can't wait to see what you guys are going to get up to. And yeah, hope to get you back and then see how these pan out.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
I mean, it's good to finally see you guys face to face, as it were, and talk about narrative kill team with people who enjoy the narrative as much, because there's a lot of great competitive content out there. It's nice to talk about the narratives
too, right?
I feel like we're talking the kings of narrative right now. Thank you for having us on board.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. That's really lovely. Well, next time on Once Upon a Kill Team, we'll be giving you the full rundown of Sean and I's new campaign. We'll be telling you about how we've set it up and about our backgrounds and the first few games, one of which we're midway through as we record this podcast. but the main feature of the next show will be Desert Island Kill Team. For those of you familiar with Desert Island Discs, the Radio 4 show, and we're using that format. You need 8 operatives, 1 leader, 1 gunner, and 6 other operatives in your dream super team, and they must all be from different factions. What will Sean and I come up with our Desert Island Kill Team super list?
I can't believe you're making me homework.
Well, you know, yeah. So folk out there, start thinking of your Desert Island Kill Team. This might be something that will plague future guests with. Anyway, we're very excited for this, and it should be a lot of fun.
If what you heard on this podcast sounds even remotely interesting, subscribe and tell your friends. For every subscription to the podcast, your Breacher Boy will weather off another volley of las fire from the veteran guardsmen.
If you have a few spare pennies and would like to support the show, you can do so through Ko-fi. Ko-fi. There is a link in the show notes. Once Upon a Kill Team will always be free, and any help you give goes towards making the podcast better. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on Once Upon a Kill Team. Just remember, it's not whether you won or lost, it's whether your Votran Longlas melts a hole in between the commando knob's eyes, causing him to keel over and lose control of a vital asset. See you next time.